Welcome to the Finance Path Podcast, where we discuss all your burning questions relating to money, property, and investment for every stage of life. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Attard and Chris Collard.
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of Money, Property, and You. You're here with Mark Attard, and I'm joined with my fellow Director of Finance Path, Chris Collard. How are you, Chris?
G'day, Mark. I'm very well.
Fantastic. Well, what we're talking about today, we're actually running off the back of our previous, or the podcast of last week, where we started to tuck into and we analysed Waleed Ali's episode, or is the rant on the project. And so we thought we'd jump over to the other side, and you're looking at an article from Tom Elliott that was written in the Herald Sun, I believe, is that right?
Yeah, it's correct. Written in the Herald Sun in April, and he's talking through that, well, his view is that negative gearing, you know, essentially is not the reason why house prices in Melbourne are so unaffordable.
So before we jump into that and you start to give us your analysis of the article, I'm intrigued. Glory days. Now, again, aside from, I suppose, showing our age, and the boss, Bruce Springsteen, what's the link? Talk me through why you've decided on Glory Days as our intro song.
Yeah, so everyone seems to look fondly back 10, 20, 30 years ago. I know as a kid, I remember I used to be able to buy minimum chips at the fish and chip shop for 60 cents, and I used to get a bag full of lollies for 20 cents at their milk bar, and everything seems so expensive these days, but you know, the glory days, sometimes when you really dig deep and look under the covers, maybe they weren't as good as we thought. Yeah. And maybe, you know, maybe not everything was as rosy as we thought back 30 years ago.
And that's a bit of a gist through the article, from what I understand, that Tom's sort of taking us back to. Yeah, I hear what you're saying there. I mean, I think just, being a parent these days, I often, and we have conversations with our friends, etc., that will turn around and say, geez, you know, even kids today, letting our kids out on the street to play out in the street. I know when I was growing up, it was you were out on the road, you were kicking the football, you weren't so concerned about cars driving over you, you're hitting cricket balls, or you're riding your bikes until dark. And mum and dad, certainly, or mine, didn't seem too perturbed about it. Maybe that said more about me than and their desire to have me there. Then, so I think it's human nature to look upon the past a little bit fonder and sort of erase some of the tougher memories, because I know in my personal experience was during those times as well. My father went through discussed before in our story, a redundancy, etc., and things weren't necessarily that easy. So I'll throw it over to you and take us through, what are the key points that Tom addresses in his article?
Yeah, so Tom looks over the period of the last 30 years around housing affordability, and he really asked the questions, was housing always unaffordable with negative gearing in place? And he uses the early 90s as a point in time to say, well, housing was considered cheap then, but negative gearing was around as well. So is it really negative gearing that is the reason that is leading house prices to push up? Or are there other things at play that we need to consider? And is it too simplistic an argument to say that if we sort negative gearing out, for whatever reason they're trying to do it, that that's going to have, a downward impact on housing affordability?
Yeah, so he's saying negative gearing was primarily in play back then.
Yes.
Yet we're saying that those times were good, it's in play now, but now we're isolating it as potentially one of the key reasons as to why, you know, times aren't so good or housing affordability.
Yeah, exactly right. And he's arguing that that's a simplistic, but a possibly a pretty narrow focus.
Cool. Okay. So, what else is he bringing up in his article?
Yeah. So, look, I'll just highlight a couple of key points without reading the whole article. That he says that negative gearing is not the reason Melbourne house prices are so expensive, and also getting rid of this legitimate tax deduction won't make life much easier for first homeowners, particularly as the Labor government, with their policy, has said that they want to make housing affordable, particularly for young families and new entrants in the market. His argument is that that legitimate tax deduction making change to that won't make much of a difference. He also then goes out and says that substantially cheaper housing will only come about if we ban all immigration and engineer a recession, which is a fairly sort of strong statement to make, but we'll dig a little bit deeper into what that actually means.
And that's like that's understandable as well. I mean, that's sensationalised a little bit, controversial, but to get cut through, I suppose, in the media, no different from what Waleed did last week.
Exactly right.
You know, to get some cut through and to have a position and a stance, sometimes you need to, you do need to make such comments. So, all right, so let's focus then on those points that are relevant to discuss. So we'll start with like getting rid of this legitimate tax deduction won't make life much easier for first home buyers. I find it interesting that he's gone and whacked in legitimate as opposed to illegitimate. I mean, I dare say, you know, some of the focus has been around tax avoidance, especially by wealthy Australians. So maybe there's a reference there to saying, hey, this is actually a legitimate one as opposed to some of the other tactics.
Yeah, I think really between the lines here, I think Tom's suggesting that that negative gearing and any changes that should be part of a wider tax reform conversation and linking that purely to a housing affordability issue. And more importantly, looking to sort of the blame those culprit of small-time property investors and overseas buyers as driving up property prices is really trying to push an agenda that doesn't actually need to be pushed is his point there. But what he does argue as a result of that is that over the last 30-odd years that negative gearing has been around, there have been times that that housing has been considered affordable and that there are other influences at play that have led to the affordability issue that we currently have now. There's often a reference to the good old days or these glory days that we refer to in the song when housing was affordable and people could buy a home for a smaller percentage of their income that they can now. In fact, what he does, he points out that in the early 90s, the median house price was around 3.5 times the average income that we have now. Now, houses are approximately seven times the average salary.
Yeah, okay. So explain that. We touched on this last week as well, because, you know, what's really confusing for a lot of us out there and for our clients and no doubt those of many that are listening to the podcast is that numbers can sometimes be skewed and tell any story that you want to tell. So in summary, like those figures that he's pointing out, what is he actually saying there?
Yeah, exactly. Well, in terms of three times average salary, he's using that as a number to say that when people say housing was affordable, they're using the average time salary compared to what they bought houses for as the benchmark.
And it's gone from 3.5 to 7.
Yeah, it's effectively double. Yeah. It's effectively, in terms of using your salary, average salary as a benchmark, it is twice as much to buy a home.
So does that not then support, though, the argument that it is more expensive now? Like, is that... Yeah,
that in isolation, absolutely. But there's a whole range of other factors that led to houses costing 3.5 times your average salary that have to be considered as well.
Yeah,
and when we look at those and look at the other factors, were those days really better? And using the average time salary benchmark in isolation is maybe a very, very narrow view.
Okay, yeah, cool. So... I dare say that then leads into, talk us through then this economic environment that you're referencing. If it's not pinned to negative gearing, or if he feels that negative gearing hasn't played a significant role, you know, what was the economic environment like that led to houses costing only, 3.5 times the average salary?
So go back 30 years ago. Now, using interest rates as one of those benchmarks, interest rates 30 years ago in the early 90s were anywhere between 10% and 17%. Now that is foreign to anybody that has bought a house in the last 5, 6, 7 years.
Not foreign to our parents though. Have you had the conversation? I've certainly had mum and dad sit down and go, you guys don't understand how good you got it. Remember when we bought our first home, it was might have been 55 grand, but it was interest rates are up around that 16% mark.
I think it's almost a rite of passage. It stands along the birds and the bees conversation.
Yeah.
You have the birds and the bees conversation and you had the how easy you've got it conversation with interest rates. Every person that's bought a house in the last 5 or 6 years would understand that.
Yeah, yeah. Chucking the old obligatory sort of money doesn't grow on trees comment somewhere along the way. I've got that a few times.
It's like a dad joke.
Yeah, cool.
So let's really understand what an environment with interest rates around 10 between 10 and 17% looks like. Now, that's anywhere between 2.5 and 4 times higher than what we're currently paying now. So if I put that in perspective so that we understand, an average, it'd be fair to say, Mark, an average loan size these days is about $500,000.
I think that's what we see in our business. I think we're a little bit above the average, but it's a good reference point to use as the example.
Yep. So if we use $500,000, the interest-only repayments on that in the current market is anywhere between about $20,000 and $25,000 per year to maintain that loan.
Yep. Now, that's just the interest component.
That's just the interest component, but let's do a like-for-like comparison. So we're comparing a $20,000 to $25,000 interest-only component to maintain the loan repayments. If we had interest rates like we did 30 years ago, these repayments would be anywhere between $60,000 and $75,000. That's a huge increase that a family would need to find just to maintain the house that they had. I suggest that an increase of anywhere between $40,000, $45,000, $50,000 is going to have a significant impact on the affordability that people are actually going to be able to buy a house for.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I think the thing to that as well is that understanding that if you were to flesh out that example, that if you use the house prices back then and then you still put that interest rate on top of that what the house prices was then, you'd find that as a percentage of income that people had to allocate towards their home loan repayments, it would have been quite significant. Because quite now, often you hear people talking about what percentage of their income they need to go towards mortgage repayments. And don't get me wrong, I believe that that's also creeped up over the journey. But it's not as huge a discrepancy as some of the times that we've had potentially in the past.
No, exactly right. And also, like, you think about not just the increase in disposable or income that you need to contribute to your house. Think about the fact that if interest rates are up around 17%, the qualification for people to be able to borrow the level of funds they have at the moment is almost non-existent. They just can't access the funds they have access to now, which is going to have a negative impact or a downward impact on housing affordability.
Okay, so that's rates. What else is there?
So 30 years ago as well, and we've probably also had this conversation with our parents, but unemployment was anywhere between 10 and 12%. Now, those sort of numbers are foreign to anybody that's sort of 40 years or younger at the moment. Considering now...
So we, you're a little bit outside of that boat then.
I'm 41.
Let's use 42 to make you feel Let's use 42.
but think about that. That's back in 30 years ago. That's one in 10 people that you know didn't have a job.
It'd be interesting for our listeners to sit back and think about that and go, okay, well, amongst my group of friends and my inner circle, et cetera, of the 10... my 10 closest friends, how many of those are actually out of work at this point?
Yeah, exactly right. And 30 years ago, that was the environment. One in 10 people you knew didn't have a job. Compare that to current day. Unemployment rates are 1 in 20. It's easy to identify that, you know, clearly if more people are in work, there's a more stable environment, there's a more stable economy, and there's more people out in the market looking for houses.
Yeah, okay. So that takes care of unemployment, interest rates. We're going into detail here that neither political party would be overly keen on, or the media outlets. What else is there? Is there any other?
Yeah, and the final point that Tom really, really focuses on, and he made a point of banning all immigration, but if you dig a little bit deeper, the point that he makes there is that Victoria is very much in an increasing population environment. Back 30 years ago, for those of you that remember the end of the Kane and the Kerner governments, the state government was virtually bankrupt with more people leaving the state than were coming. Compare that to now, and last year nearly 100,000 people came to live in Victoria alone. Victoria was the fastest growing state in the country, and all those people clearly need somewhere to live. You know, some are going to want to live in the inner city, some are going to want to live in the inner suburbs, and others want to move out to newer states. But the clear point is that this all leads to increased demand in those areas, and increased demand without any increased supply is going to lead to an increase in house prices.
Yeah, and we touched on that, especially if we're talking about housing affordability, and understand that this article is very Melbourne-centric, because Tom, it's written in the Herald Sun, which is obviously a leading Melbourne paper, but we touched on some of these numbers last week, and you know, when we're talking about housing affordability, population growth and net migration in, etc., it was quite clear that especially in the states of Victoria and New South Wales, and to a degree, Brisbane and Queensland, were the ones that had seen the greatest increases in population. And surprise, surprise, they're the states that probably are crying out loudest when it comes to this issue of housing affordability. And surprise, yep, surprise, exactly, that's where most of the population is. It's probably where the majority of the votes are, and that's why our friends in the Liberal and the Labor Party are focusing in and trying to make housing affordability and negative gearing like a populist sort of point to argue or attract votes. Right, so in summary, so the key points that Tom's trying to make is that there's other and potentially more important factors that are leading to housing affordability, this housing affordability crisis, than those that are making all of the headlines at the moment. Is that a fair summary?
Yeah, exactly right. I suppose to summarise, he's highlighting the fact that negative gearing was around when housing was considered cheap, and that was 30 years ago. And it's narrow-minded and simplistic to think that one change to our taxation system, by itself, is going to resolve this.
Yeah, okay. So from one blue blood, I dare say at the end of the day, Tom Elliott has definitely got more of a political slant towards the Liberals. So from one blue blood over there to another one sitting opposite me here, exposing your political bent. That's fine. That's Tom's opinion. What's your view?
Yeah, my view is I think they've got to stop making this negative gearing issue the whipping boy of housing affordability. And I think they've got to address the real issues that are impacting house prices. Like there's increased demand and there's a genuine lack of supply. Where people want to live is the key point. You know, if the government wants people to live in areas where the land is, and that's, for example, in the outer suburbs, I think they've got to address the genuine lack of planning, foresight and the investment in sort of infrastructure like roads, shops, schools in these areas where families and young people still don't want to live. That's the reality.
And we have had discussions about this this issue, and you talked about infrastructure, etc. And you provide an example of you're talking about like fast trains and making living further out something that wasn't a sort of time impost, because I keep coming back to also most people are time poor as well too. So one of the challenges of getting people to be keen to live further out is, you know, when we're talking about city commutes, etc., etc.
Yeah, exactly right. Like I was listening to something online only a few weeks ago regarding, you know, putting infrastructure in that makes fast trains an absolute possibility. You know, we've got some really good outlying sort of suburbs and more importantly, some regional towns that people would want to live if infrastructure was supplied in those areas. And, you know, if a fast train could, you know, from Bendigo or Albury or wherever those areas are and those regional towns are, could get people back into Melbourne within sort of 45 minutes, you'd see those areas really, really boom. And that would do a hell of a lot more to resolve any sort of affordability issue than sitting there trying to tinker with one aspect of a very, very complicated tax system.
Yeah, no, I agree. Alrighty, so that's in summary. I mean, the gist of what we're talking about there. Other comments that you have to make, I suppose, that, or are you totally 100% on board with what Tommy Boy's talking about?
Yeah, look, I think so. Look, the reality is there's an inherent want for people to live closer to the established suburbs, and you know there's a lack of demand for lack of supply for that type of stock and that type of housing. And with a limit on this type of housing combined with the current low interest rates that we're paying, low unemployment, an increasing population that we've got, as we were able to say, that more people are coming to Victoria than are leaving. Any changes to negative gearing in isolation, I believe, are going to do little to make housing affordable in the areas that people, where they want to live. So I think the negative gearing issue is one that may have to be addressed, but I think it's got to be addressed as part of a wider taxation review and simplifying our taxation review or our taxation system, as opposed to trying to link it to any housing affordability problems that we currently have.
Well, I suppose it's probably a good thing, but possibly a little bit disappointing for controversy that that's probably an extension and not dissimilar from the views that I put across last week. You talked about, you know, broader tax implications, and let's face it, that's not exactly an overly exciting topic, but no. I think it's one that, at the end of the day, is worth just spending a little bit of time on, so we might do that next week. So, for the listeners out there, thank you very much last week for your questions. What we'll look to do is address those questions next week, and we'll tie that in with a little discussion around the tax reform, but not in the context of tax reform, because as I said, it's pretty boring. We'll talk about what it could potentially mean as an impact on us, the everyday Australians out there, and what seems to be missing from this argument. And if at the end of the day, we can paint a little bit of a clearer picture for people out there, especially in the lead up to, you know, this election and walking into their local high school or primary school or wherever they're going to do their voting, then hopefully, yeah, we can shed a little bit of light. So thank you again for listening, guys. As I said, shoot through your questions to customerservice@financepath.com.au, and we'll get to those as well as the ones that were sent through last week. And we look forward to catching up with you next week. Cheers.
For more information about this podcast or to ask a burning question, visit www.financepath.com.au/podcasts.